Welcome to the Clifford Chance InsurTech Trends podcast series, where experts from our global insurance sector team will be exploring themes and issues relating to InsurTech. My name is Julia Chabanian, and you are listening to the 2023 UK Trends in InsurTech podcast, where my colleagues will be discussing regulatory changes affecting InsurTech in the UK, taking a closer look at how artificial intelligence and regulation by the PRA and FCA is impacting the insurance sector. And finally, we'll be exploring regulatory and legal topics related to embedded insurance. I'm here today with Ashley Prebble, the head of the firm's Financial Institutions Group and Global Insurance Sector Group, and Emma Eaton, a senior associate in the group. Today, we'll be talking about three InsurTech-related trends from a UK perspective. Firstly, regulatory change and its relevance to InsurTech. Linked to this, we will then look at some specific points about AI and regulation in the insurance sector. And finally, we'll focus on embedded insurance. So let us begin with regulatory change. Ashley, before we get into the regulatory landscape affecting InsurTech in the UK, can you remind us about the main players in the UK InsurTech landscape?
Thanks, Julia. Hi, everybody. Yes, absolutely. So I think firstly, we have the incumbent insurers who are regulated by both the PRA, the Prudential Regulator, and the FCA, the Conduct Regulator. Then we have the MGAs, the Managing General Agents, which is the model that's been used by a number of customer-facing, consumer-facing insurtechs. They're regulated by the FCA only. They have delegated underwriting authority from insurers. They will sell their products directly to customers or consumers. Some of those MGAs, as I say, are regulated in their own right, but some of them will operate as appointed representatives, which means that they are able to benefit from the authorization of their principal. That principal will either be an intermediary or an insurer themselves and allows them to operate whilst being unregulated themselves, but having to comply with regulation. And if they were to breach that regulation, then it's their principal who is liable for them. Often contractually, they are then providing an indemnity to that principal to cover them for the loss that they suffer. So that's the subset really of the MGA group. And then you also have the SaaS providers, the software as a service providers. They may or may not be regulated by the FCA depending on the activities that they undertake, but they are providing services to insurers or intermediaries. For example, the cloud service providers fall within that category. So the regulatory landscape often depends about the type of business that they are, as opposed to them being an insurtech. So who are their regulators? What do they do? What activities do they undertake? And you take it from there. Those who are regulated by the FCA, for example, that sort of focus on them because that's sort of the MGAs and the appointed reps are complying with, among other things, the conduct rules, the principles for business, operational resilience, and will be subject to the consumer duty rules when they come through. There are also non-insurance type regulations which are relevant to them. The Equalities Act, unfair contract terms, GDPR, all very applicable to InsurTech businesses. So the general view is that this is a highly regulated sector. All market participants need to be absolutely aware of their regulatory obligations, even when they are indirect as an appointed representative.
So there's lots going on in the UK in terms of regulatory change, as you just touched on. Can you set the scene for us?
Yes, absolutely. So I think as a starting point for InsurTech, I mean, to my recollection, I look back to, say, 2015, which is when the FCA made a call for input on big data in retail general insurance. And that's when the regulator started to be more specific in looking at the use of technology and their particularly big data and adapting their regulatory lens, taking into account that regulatory advancements. We can see the FCA and the PRA sees both the positives and the challenges from technological change. And you see that in all of their papers. And you saw it in that first big data paper, where they could see how there were potential benefits from a pricing perspective, from the ability to analyze and provide better, higher quality products for consumers. But also at the same time, there could be segmentation of risks impacting availability of insurance and affecting vulnerable customers. And I think they also saw a correlation perhaps between technological advances and perhaps poor outcomes or poorer outcomes from a pricing perspective for consumers. So ever since then, we've really seen this balance of opportunities and risks, particularly thinking about vulnerable customers in some areas. So for those in the market, I think looking at the new consumer duty rules, looking at the consultation paper on AI, there is always going to be these trade-off. And I think market participants need to look in particular the risks that the regulators assess for each type of technology.
Emma, could you tell us a bit more about how the PRA and FCA actually support InsurTech?
Sure. I'd say the UK has been at the forefront of regulatory involvement in understanding the implications of technology on financial services. Specific to InsurTech, examples of what they've done are the sandbox, which has been in place at the FCA since 2016. That was designed to support InsurTechs, offering them a safe space to launch and test new products. And that's been replicated by other regulators like the Singapore MAS, for example. The PRA has its new insurer startup unit and the coming into force the optional mobilisation regime. The mobilisation regime being part of the Solvency II review by the Treasury that's designed to facilitate startups wanting to become insurers. And it's looking at adjusting things like threshold requirements for capital, personnel and reporting. We're expecting a consultation paper on that later in 2023. There's the AI discussion paper that Ashley's already mentioned. That's now closed for responses, but it's going to inform the next steps taken by the PRA and the FCA in relation to regulation and how it applies to AI and financial services. And there's obviously a global discussion taking place on the adoption of AI. We've seen papers and policies published by China, the US, Canada, Singapore, Hong Kong Monetary Authority. There's the EU AI Act and IOSCO principles for regulators of securities business. So it's a really broad financial services discussion that's taking place. And as I say, the PRA and the FCA are, you know, well embedded in those discussions. There's the consumer duty that Ashley's mentioned. So that's coming into force in a few months' time for new and existing products. Perhaps that's maybe a little bit less supportive. It's creating some frictional concerns between those in the distribution chain about who has responsibility for compliance, for example, the exact scope of the duty, you know, how do you prevent foreseeable harm to customers in the context of technology and speed to market. Then there's the push to make the UK more competitive internationally with the government introducing new powers and the secondary international competitiveness and growth objective for the PRA that's coming in through the Financial Services and Markets Bill. And the expectation there is that the PRA will use those powers to regulate responsibly and tailor the rules to broader objectives of the UK. And obviously the UK government is very keen on the adoption of artificial intelligence and complex technology to help improve products, services, reduce prices and all of that good stuff.
And looking at the PRA in particular, it's a prudential regulator. So why is it interested in SaaS providers?
Ashley's mentioned there's lots of intermediaries in the insurtech space and they're not regulated by the PRA, but it has a wide sphere of influence. So the PRA has got a current focus on AI, machine learning, etc., and the implications of technology. It's very much part of that consultation that we've mentioned already that closed in February this year. It was a joint consultation with the FCA and the Bank of England and the PRA. The PRA had set up and chaired the Artificial Intelligence Public-Private Forum a few years ago with the FCA, and that was designed to help them better understand the impact of AI and machine learning, and it led on to this discussion paper that we've been talking about. So they're very heavily embedded in working out what the implications are, but the PRA was also one of the first regulators globally to introduce standards for operational resilience. And it's not hard to see how that links with new technology, for example, you know, requiring impact tolerances for important business services to be set. And that's irrespective of whether the AI is developed in-house or bought from a third party. And then it's got other areas of interest like outsourcing. There's, you know, the constant reminder that even if you outsource, you can't outsource responsibility for your compliance with regulation. It's involved in fit and proper requirements under the SMNCR. And then it's looking at moving things that are happening in other financial services like banking and applying them to the insurance sector, like possibly open finance becoming open insurance in the future. So it's very much got a role to play.
Ashley, what would you say is the impact of regulatory focus and regulatory change for the insurance ecosystem overall?
Well, I think it leads to a lot of reading, certainly, for those in the industry. I mean, as Emma and I have really outlined, there is a lot of regulation in the sector. And so new insurtechs coming in, whether they are ARs, who they may feel that they're unregulated, that regulation is less relevant to them, but it's not, because of the requirement to comply with regulation and to take on that contractual indemnity as part of that focus. So compliance is very important, of course, and so it's going to impact business models, it's going to impact product design, it's going to impact processes, both on the sales side and the claims side. And the importance of really keeping up to date with new regulatory changes and developments.
So there's a broad range of risks and regulatory issues to consider. So moving on to our second topic, discussing AI. Emma, can you tell us about some of the key technology developments and regulatory trends that we should be aware of in relation to AI?
Yeah, sure. So insurtech's obviously driven by advances in technology, and it's a broad subject. You know, the adoption of new technology has got lots of possible use cases in the insurance industry. But there's always going to be unforeseen risks with new technology, and that's a major concern for both the PRA and the FCA. Regulators often have to play catch-up, having to hire like new experts, get involved with discussions at industry level with partners and academics, and we've seen both the PRA and FCA do that in the past, but also regulators in other jurisdictions as well. So there's been lots of groundwork over the past few years to get to the place that we're at the moment, which is, again, this discussion paper that we keep mentioning, but kind of can't stress how important this discussion paper is going to be for applications to AI. So obviously AI itself is a broad subject. And as a conduct regulator, the FCA has a particular interest in protecting customers from risks. And those with AI could include exclusion of customers. So I think we've already mentioned issues with vulnerable customers already, but it's also things like what price will be set and indeed whether a claim is ultimately paid or refused by the AI. They're very wary of products becoming unaffordable or unavailable completely. But they also accept that AI is going to bring lots of benefits. Increasing competition being one of them, choice of products potentially, and hopefully better customer experiences. So there's a big desire, and this comes through in the discussion paper, for the regulators to understand how they can best support the safe and responsible adoption of AI in the UK financial services markets. When we get the feedback from the discussion paper, this is going to definitely impact the work of both the PRA and the FCA. And in terms of insurance policyholder protection, that paper specifically talked about the fact that AI is used across the value chain in insurance. So there's lots of kind of entry points for issues to crop up. There's the governance section. Do boards and senior managers understand how AI works? That's the so-called explainability requirement, and that extends to matters including ethics. So ethics is mentioned in that paper. So boards need to be aware that they've got quite a broad remit of things that they need to think about. And from the PRA's perspective, they're obviously concerned that companies are using AI for things like cash flow and capital reserving, and that could result in inaccuracies, and that might lead to reserves that are inadequate, for example, as well as we've already mentioned things like operational resilience, and of course they have an interest in governance too.
I mean, I think that's interesting, Emma. When you look at the paper, they really focus on those on three areas, don't they? Data,
models and governance,
yeah,
and the impact of AI in each of those areas. And I think I was particularly struck by a couple of comments they make. Reading from it, they say many of the issues related to AI are not new and apply to other data analytics, modeling techniques and technologies, which is why they then, in the paper, look at existing regulatory frameworks like Consumer Duty, like the Equality Act, and how they could be used and question whether they need to be enhanced or not. Yeah. But then make the point that AI does introduce novel challenges and you can't get away from that.
Yeah,
and absolutely. So there's a debate whether or not you define AI or define it by exclusion. And it just feels like there's a long road here, I think.
They're definitely feeling their way, aren't they, at the moment?
Yeah.
And that comes out in the long list of questions in the paper that they want responses from. Although, as we say, the paper, unfortunately, is closed now, but I'm sure lots of people did respond to it.
And I'm sure there'll be other opportunities to respond to future papers.
Hopefully, yeah.
So we've already touched on some of these issues, such as governance or using data for pricing. But what do you think the discussion paper will lead to in terms of regulatory change? Will it be a huge shift?
The FCA is obviously focused on consumer protection. Both of them are focused on safety and soundness of the market. And I'd say they're keeping their options open at the moment. It might lead to clarification, as Ashley says, of how current regulation applies to AI, or simplification of some areas of regulation, we can only hope, or the extension of regulation to address specific AI harm. So currently regulation is not really tech specific. There are some areas like the cloud papers that are out there, but it's generally not tech specific. But this might see a pivot towards making regulation a bit more tech specific. Might lead to a regulatory definition of AI, or possibly a sectoral regulatory definition. And it's likely to result in more guidance for firms, which of course should be helpful.
Yeah. I mean, look, in reality, it's going to be outcomes based, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think really, which is there identified consumer harm as a result of the use of AI? Does it lead to discriminatory outcomes? Does it lead to vulnerable customers either being uninsured or insurance being priced so high as to be therefore realistically uninsurable? And if that is the case, then I suspect that's when we really see that regulatory intervention. And they'll be looking at, is there something wrong with the data that goes in? Is there something wrong with the models? And is there something wrong with the governance regimes?
Yeah.
And that's ultimately where it will come to, is it's an outcomes-based approach, I suspect.
Yeah. And I think the governance is a critical point. The, you know, upskilling boards is going to be an important area for companies, for firms to think about, making sure they've got the right diversity of thought on their boards and they can explain and understand the ever increasing complexity of the AI models that they're using.
Yeah.
So it's a real challenge for firms.
It's also going to be a challenge for the individual who decides to take on the SMF function to be responsible for AI.
Yeah.
So look forward to seeing people sign up for that one.
Interesting. Look forward to the feedback on that discussion paper. Are there any particular trends in the InsurTech space that you are seeing?
Yeah, I think I'd briefly touch on Metaverse, which I find quite exciting and interesting. Ashley and I attended the InsurTech conference, the InsurTech Europe conference a few weeks ago, and I listened to a section on Metaverse. And its origins are obviously in gaming and entertainment, and I won't even pretend to say that I've, you know, dabbled in any of these metaverses that are out there, but it's got a lot of potential functions. There's obviously businesses that have set up in the metaverse, so you can see that there's a burgeoning market for insurance products potentially, or at least the ability to market your insurance products through the metaverse. The tech, I believe, is not quite there yet. For example, VR headsets are expensive and they look quite clunky. They're not very user-friendly necessarily. But there's a clear drive to evolve the technology, you know, both the VR technology and the actual metaverse and what it does. There's already incumbents that are dabbling in the metaverse. So Swiss Re has started to experiment with applications, and AXA acquired land in the sandbox. But there are multiple metaverses, so the progress is a bit fragmented at the moment. I think from a regulatory point of view, the rules that govern the metaverse are the biggest issue. Insurers are obviously not going to want to get involved with a new Wild West, as it were, where fraud and illegal activity can be hidden among legitimate businesses. So care will have to be taken there. And there's also then the question about how, if you like, real world regulation applies to a virtual world. So it could offer new distribution models, new markets for insurers and intermediaries, but it's no doubt going to come with some foreseeable and also, unfortunately, unforeseeable risks.
Thank you. Moving on to our third trends topic, embedded insurance. First of all, can you explain what embedded insurance is?
So embedded insurance is a little bit like what it says on the tin, in that it's the embedding of an insurance product into a sales process when you are also at the same time selling a non-insurance product or service. So to take an example, if you buy an expensive piece of home gym equipment from the retailer's website or the manufacturer's website, you also take out the insurance at the same time, and you don't leave that first site you're buying it as an embedded experience. An embedded insurance has been around for actually quite some time. So extended warranty providers are relatively common on larger products. You've seen that for washing machines. It's just been done in a different way. So you may, I think original embedded insurance were for those types of products, the insurance option was a product wording within the packaging of the washing machine itself. Now this is digitalized. And you can see it for other types of products. You also see it in financial services if you're selling insurance at the same time as banking services or banking products through a bank assurance model. So it's not new in of itself. I feel like we say this a lot about insurtech. It's not new in of itself, but it is part of a digitalization of the customer experience. And people are looking at all sorts of different ways of embedding insurance into other products and services. People talk about aiming these products at millennials more than baby boomers, who are so used to buying and selling things on their phones through apps and that single simple experience of buying or selling and taking on other products at the same time. And recognizing it's not just lead generation or introductions, which is the more traditional affinity model. This is a one customer experience to buy the product and the non-insurance product at the same time.
So you mentioned this sounds very similar to what goes on already. If I'm booking something online, like a flight or a hotel train ticket, I'm already asked if I want to add insurance onto it. So what is different about embedded insurance? Why are we speaking about it in this context of insurtech?
I think true embedded insurance is where the insurance comes with the product automatically. Some people talk about it in that context, but that raises regulatory issues, and it's unclear if the product can ever be truly embedded like that in the UK due to UK conduct of business requirements largely and challenges with complying with the new consumer duty, for example, consumer understanding and avoiding exploitation of behavioural bias. There's also, I think, risk of mis-selling ultimately when you introduce a new distribution model. You know, will the product truly meet a customer's needs and have real value to them? There's the over-insurance issue potentially with embedded insurance. I think one good thing about it is it should, in theory, at least fit the target market, because you're buying something that's specific to the non-insurance product that you've gone to the retailer for. So the product in that sense ought to have value because the policy is tailored to the purchase that's being made. But that hasn't necessarily stopped mis-selling issues in the past. You know, for example, where insurance is sold alongside the purchase of a mobile phone, you know, that raised mis-selling issues. You know, past cases, they've got their own fact patterns, and there's various matters that when you add them up together result in mis-selling. But you can see there's definitely room for risk with embedded insurance. But ultimately, I'd say the aim of it is for the sales process to be seamless, as Ashley says. But whether that can be achieved will depend, I think, on the complexity of the product that's underwritten.
On the point about customer data, so the insurer is using data from the business to sell me insurance. Can they do that?
Yeah, yes, they can do that. But they obviously, both distributor or manufacturer slash retailer and the insurer need to be very aware of their data protection obligations, ensuring that they understand each other's roles. And it can be different depending on how the embedded insurance is sold. The relationship is often with the retailer, but it can really depend, I think, in those in different circumstances and different models,
how the data protection analysis operates. We've seen it done different ways. I mean, clearly, though, what is critical is that the consumer understands how their data is used and they give correct permissions for its use and the sharing with insurers as needed in order to underwrite the risks. So I think that's really the key elements there. But I think it's bespoke as opposed to general in terms of DP rules on this.
If insurance products are being presented to the customer as at the point of sale in the seamless experience, does this model perhaps take away choice from the customer?
I think that's a very fair point. And I think that's always been the challenge with embedded insurance or bank assurance type models. And I think the regulators are going to be hyper focused on this, which is ensuring that there is fair value, that the consumers understand the products that they're buying, and also that they do have this element of choice. So they're not compelled to buy the insurance at the same time as the product. It is a choice and it is an option. And we've certainly seen in the past that regulators have expected customers to be told by the retailers, whether it's banks or others, that there are other options available and be quite explicit about that. So it'll be interesting to see how that trend moves on. I think it's going to develop as these models become more sophisticated. And I think those who are developing these models absolutely need to keep an eye on the consumer regulatory aspects of this.
And what about conduct of business regulatory issues in the embedded insurance world? Are there many?
Yes, I think as Ashley's just said, the people who are playing in this area need to be very conscious of conduct regulation. Of course, you know, there's lots of signposts in that duty that the industry should take into consideration when designing the customer journey for embedded insurance models. Fundamentally, firms that are selling to retail customers have to act to deliver good outcomes for customers. And that's the crux, if you like, of the new duty. I think one of the most interesting aspects is the expectation not to exploit behavioural biases or a lack of knowledge. And if one of the benefits of embedded insurance is precisely to exploit the point of sale opportunity in order to sell insurance, there's also, you know, the information requirements. So you've already got product requirements that intermediaries and insurers will be familiar with, but the consumer duty goes above and beyond that. They want customers to understand the product that they're being sold, and whether that fits with the seamless experience of embedded insurance is another question. So there'll be a few things to consider, but at the end of the day, you know, the customer still needs to engage with the buying process. They've got to be persuaded to purchase the policy, and I don't think you can circumvent that requirement.
Now, I think if you look deeply into this, there's so much history on embedded insurance and areas where the regulator has had to intervene. Some of those have been in areas where products have been sold on an opt-out basis. So you buy a product online, the insurance is sold with it automatically. There is this choice, but it's done on an opt-out, and you have to navigate through 5 or 6 different screens in order to find the opt-out button. And I think, in effect, the regulator considers that, I think, in some ways, quite rightly, that that's anti-competitive and not fair from a customer perspective. And so I think realistically, embedded insurance will need to be designed on an opt-in basis, providing the information that the customers require in order to make a reasoned choice about acquiring that insurance. Now, that's not to say that embedded insurance can't work from a legal and regulatory perspective. It absolutely can do, but it just needs to be designed effectively. Otherwise, you're carrying significant regulatory risk. I mean, I talked about, you know, we've seen this in the past, and we saw it on gap insurance with motor vehicles, where this was looked at by the regulator in detail and found that a number of the customers who were taking out this gap insurance weren't going into the sales process expecting to buy it, were unaware of what they'd really bought, and found that the market share of add-on gap sellers was much higher than the standalone gap sales market. So those firms had a significant advantage.
Yeah, I think they didn't realise you could shop around. That's one of the, you know, the key things customers need to know, that they don't have to buy that particular product from that particular person at that particular time.
Exactly. And I don't think any of us here have got any doubt that the regulators will use the consumer duty powers that they have to deal with this. They'll also use the conduct of business rules to look at this. So, you know, we see it as a, you know, we see it obviously as an area of focus.
Presumably there are other laws as well that apply to sale of embedded insurance.
Yeah, of course. I think Ashley mentioned early on in this podcast that there's obviously other laws that need to be taken into account, like you know, data protection, consumer protection laws that might prohibit or regulate practices like the opt-out selling point that Ashley's mentioned. You know, so it's not just about working out what kind of model you have, whether your partner needs to be regulated or are they an appointed representative of yours, or are they just an introducer appointed representative, or don't they need to be regulated? Those are just, those are the very basic questions. There's a lot more to it than that. But I think it's comforting that we've heard from some people in the market that I think they said something like regulation is a minefield for embedded insurance. And I think that's a good sign that people are thinking hard about what they need to comply with.
So after all that, how would you summarise the risks with embedded insurance in that case?
Well, I think embedded insurance carries regulatory risk for everyone in the value chain. So if I go back to sort of the first question you asked me about who are the various players, it's relevant to incumbent insurers who are providing the capacity for these products. It's relevant to MGAs if they are in the chain. And it's also relevant to the manufacturers and the retailers who are distributing these. And as Emma says, they may or may not be regulated themselves. They may be able to benefit from some of the exemptions that are available in those circumstances. The connected contracts exemption is one that a number of them use. It does need to be very, very carefully managed. The contractual framework needs to be carefully managed, as does the actual product design and the sales process. And we've actually worked with a number of existing carriers and manufacturers and retailers on embedded insurance and helped them to find a safe regulatory process, mitigate some of these risks that we're talking about, and help them develop a compliant model. This is relevant for insurers like yourselves, where you are seeing these opportunities, just to ensure that you're able to have visibility of the chain through the process, that everyone is authorised as they should be, and that you're mitigating this consumer risk that we see.
Great. Well, thank you both very much for joining me today. There's a lot to think about there. So this was the UK Regulatory Trends episode. Thank you for listening. Our colleagues will be covering the regulatory trends we're seeing across Europe, Asia and America in other podcast episodes. Please don't hesitate to reach out to Clifford Chance teams for any of the topics that we've discussed today. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.